Mr. Chairman and friends, as you've just heard, we're continuing our course, Introduction to Tibetan Buddhism. In the course of this series of lectures, we've heard, first of all, quite a bit about the history of Buddhism in Tibet from the very earliest times, from its initial introduction. We've heard about schools like those of the Nyingmapas, the Kagyupas, Gelupas, and so on. We've heard about religious institutions and establishments of various kinds, and also about the Dalai Lama, about lay people in Tibetan Buddhism, about monks and monastic life. And last week, of course, we dealt with just some of the symbols of Tibetan Buddhist art. And today, this evening, we come to something even more practical, something, if I may say so, even more tangible than the symbols of Tibetan Buddhist art. This evening we come, if not to the very heart of Tibetan spiritual practice, at least to its ABC. Today we're dealing briefly with what are known as the four foundation yogas of the Tibetan Buddhist Tantra. It may well be that most of you have never heard of these foundation yogas before, and this isn't at all surprising because hardly anything, in fact, is known about these practices in the West. It might not be an exaggeration to say that nothing is known about them in the West. There are references, very cryptic references, in a few texts which have been translated from the Tibetan and published in rather obscure journals. So perhaps, as I say, it would not be any exaggeration even to make the statement that nothing really is known in the West or even outside Tibet about these particular practices. But they are nevertheless of the utmost importance because they're not known about, because they're not well known in the West. It doesn't mean that they don't have a very prominent and very important and very influential role to play in Tibetan Buddhism. Often we tend to think that if we don't know about something in the West, nobody knows about it anywhere. Rather like, as someone recently pointed out, our talk of Columbus discovering America. Because Columbus discovered America only from the standpoint of those Europeans who up to that time had been ignorant of the existence of America. So in the same way, these foundation yogas may be new to us, but they're very, very familiar things indeed. Very, very familiar ground indeed to Tibetan Buddhists and Tibetan Buddhism. We can say, I think, that these four practices, these four foundation yogas, these four mula yogas, constitute the basis of the whole spiritual life of Tibet. If one doesn't know something about these practices, if one hasn't some acquaintance with them at least, then one knows really nothing about the spiritual life of Tibet. You may know all about the Dalai Lama, and you may know a certain amount of Mahayana philosophy and so on, but if you don't know, if you haven't grasped these practices, and essentially they are practices, if you don't know something about them, if you haven't caught the feel of them, then really you know nothing about Tibetan Buddhism at all, spiritually speaking, on the spiritual plane. And inasmuch as I've said, in the West, these practices are really unknown. Even the names of them are unknown. To this extent, we may say that Tibetan Buddhism, on the spiritual side, is simply not known in the West at all. And it's because of this fact, because these practices, these four mula yogas, are so important, because they underpin and undergird, as it were, the whole vast fabric, the whole vast superstructure of Tibetan religious and spiritual life. It's for this reason that I've decided to devote a whole lecture to these
practices.
Now, first of all, just a few general observations. The practices are called foundation yogas or mula yogas. Mula is a Sanskrit word. It means, literally, root. It also means a foundation. And you can speak of either root yogas or foundation yogas, because the two terms, the two interpretations, are very closely connected, just as you may have a tree with roots. But the roots are not just roots. The roots are, as it were, the foundation of the whole tree. The tree stands firmly and squarely upon its roots. And if the roots are weak, as we know, the tree may topple over. And in the same way, we find that if the mula yogas are weak, then the tree, the edifice of the spiritual life, which one tries to erect upon that foundation, is weak and may also topple over. And therefore we find in Tibetan Buddhism that the four foundation yogas, the four mula yogas, are preparatory to the whole system, to the practice of the whole system of Vajrayana, meditation, and religious observance generally. In other words, they constitute the entrance, the doorway, the gateway to the practice of the Tantra. And it is said, it is in fact emphasized in Tibetan Buddhism, that there is no success on the tantric path, no success in Vajrayana practice, if the four foundation yogas, the four mula yogas, are neglected. They come first. You must practice these four first before you can think of embarking on the practice of the Vajrayana, on the practice of tantric Buddhism. In the West, I know some people have got into the habit of thinking that the Tantra, the Vajrayana, is a short and easy path. We're always looking for shortcuts. And as soon as you mention the Tantra, the Vajrayana, people's ears prick up. And you can almost see them, or at least feel them, thinking, well, here's a nice easy way, which, as it were, circumvents all that meditation and all that asceticism and all that study, and you can get it quickly, easily, gaily, as it were. Well, there's a certain amount of truth in this. In a sense, we may say, the Tantra is a short and easy path. One may say that it's short if one practices it long enough. And one can say that it's easy if one practices it hard enough. And the Tibetans themselves, one may say, often spend years upon years working on these foundation yogas, on these mula yogas. Years. I'm sure some of you have heard of some Tibetan monks. I believe I mentioned them in an earlier lecture. Some Tibetan monks who go into retreat for a period of 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 days, 3 hours and 3 minutes. This is a tradition. And sometimes, of course, they go into retreat for 3 years and 3 months and so on. So you might wonder, well, what do they do? There they are, sort of shut up in their little hermitage, in their cell, with just a glimmering of light coming through a small slit or a small opening, and their meal is just pushed through once a day, and they're all alone there in darkness or semi-darkness in most cases. Well, what do they do? Well, it's easy enough to say, well, they meditate. But just imagine, just think of yourself sitting down in a darkened room and just meditating indefinitely. You wouldn't get very far. You wouldn't know what to do. After an hour, you'd be restless. You might be pacing up and down your cell and wondering what to do next. But the Tibetans aren't like that. When the Tibetans go into this sort of retreat, they really do get on with it. And one of the things that they do get on with, one of the groups of practices with which they do get on, is this group of the four mula yogas, the four foundation yogas. And I have known myself personally Tibetan monks, Tibetan yogis, who have said after years of seclusion in this way, it's remarkable how quickly the time goes. They say the days, the weeks, the months, they just slip by because they're fully engaged in, fully occupied with these practices, which they find very interesting. And the more they go on with them, the more deeply they go into them, the more interesting, the more fascinating even they do find them. But this is the Tibetan way. The Tibetans are prepared to devote a great deal of time. They're prepared to be patient. They're prepared to practice hard and to practice long. But in the West, unfortunately, we do tend to be sometimes a little less patient. And we do tend very often to expect from our spiritual life, from our spiritual practices, rather quick results. And thus it is perhaps that quite a lot of people tend to neglect the preliminaries of spiritual life, of meditation and so on. But we can say that the preliminaries, if these are mastered, constitute really half the battle. I know on other occasions, in other talks, I have gone so far as to say that if you prepare for meditation properly, in the full sense, then you are already meditating, or at least almost meditating, if you only prepare yourself properly. Only too often we tend to think of the means and the end as something sort of sharply separated. The means is a means to the end, and you can, as it were, separate the one from the other. And sometimes we try to have the end separating the end from the means. But this isn't really possible. I remember on one occasion Mahatma Gandhi remarked that the end is the extreme of means. If you really want the end, devote yourself wholeheartedly to the means and forget all about the end. In this way, you will gain, sometimes before you've noticed that you have gained it, at the end. So if you peg away at the preliminaries, you'll find yourself, in due course, deep in the heart of the essentials. But if you try to neglect the preliminaries and jump ahead and leap ahead, then you may not find yourself anywhere at all. Perhaps we'll return to this topic before the end of the lecture.